Chafetz and Beis at the bottom of the page.
Chafetz and Beis specifically, yeah, three lines from the bottom. We were talking yesterday, about the various dinim that apply when a Nasi, or one of the other leaders of the Jewish people, passes away. But now more on that topic. And like yesterday, we're going to have a three-tiered system. There's the Nasi. There's the Nasi, who is the leader of the Jewish people in his time. There's the Av Beis Din, who is the head of the Sanhedrin. To some extent, the difference is that the Nasi is kind of more the political leader, although he's also a leader in Torah, but he represents the Jewish people to the outside world, basically. The Av Beis Din is the internal leader. He's the head of the Sanhedrin. And the Chacham, Rashi says that Chacham basically is the city rav, the person who people go to pask in Shilas. There's another explanation based on Yerushalmi, based on various other sources, that the Chacham actually is kind of the third level person in the Sanhedrin, in the central body of the Jewish people. So you have your Nasi, you have your Av Beis Din. The Chacham is the one who is in charge of, for the most part, when people come to the Sanhedrin with practical questions of halacha, not always does a full Sanhedrin assemble and vote on it. Usually it'll be up to the Chacham to pass it in. To give them an ad hoc sakalach. If it's something controversial or whatever, then you assemble everybody together and start voting and all. Dura sort of Shonim, for example, explains based on that on that basis. He says, for example, we find it described elsewhere. I think the Yerushalmi describes someplace that Rabbi Eliezer was the Chacham in Yavne, and so therefore he explains on that basis the famous story of the Tanur Shalach Noi, where they ask, you know, a certain kind of oven, is it for Kabbal Truma or not? And Rabbi Eliezer says it's not, and everybody else says it does, because he's the Chacham. He figures it's my bailiwick. The full Sanhedrin anyway is not assembling right now. This is my kind of job. People come with a Shaila and Halacha, I pass in it. Whereas everybody else considered that, no, this is a novel kind of case, and we all need to discuss it, and we all disagree with you, and therefore, after Rabban Lazarus, etc. So, Chacham Shemes, when a Chacham passes away, Beis Midrash Shai Batal, his own Beis Midrash is Batal. They suspend their learning in order to make a hesped and sit Shiva and everything. What does Beis Midrash mean? Rashi says it means the people who usually learn Torah directly from him. So again, if we say that Chacham is, like Rashi had said before, the city Rav, then usually he's the one who teaches the people of the city Torah. So then we're talking about his Beis Midrash. If we're talking about the Chacham of the Sanhedrin, then similarly it means the people who usually come to learn by him.
How long are they
one for Shiva. Av Beis Din Shemes, next level up, when the Av Beis Din passes away, called Batei Midrashes Shebe Iroi Betalim, and then all the Batei Midrashes in the city, whether they're the ones who learned from him directly or not, are all Batei. V'nichnasen Lebeis HaKnesses, and when people come to Shul, or Meshananes Mekoyman, then they change their places. Hayoshin Matzofen Yoshin Badorim, Hayoshin Badorim Yoshin Matzofen. The people who normally sit on the north sit on the south, and vice versa. The simple idea of it is so a couple of Mepharshim talk about different possibilities why. One idea is like it shows we're unsettled now. Before we were able to learn Torah properly, and now like we're unsettled, we're not even able to be in our normal places and be able to learn the proper way. Bahram Sheikh has a tshuva about it, where he discusses the issue that it may not be a matter of that you have to actually change your place, it's like to go to the opposite end of the shul, because he says, for example, what happens, the Gemara is not talking about over here, about east and west. Usually, we know, as it is true nowadays also, the people who sit on the Mizrach Vant, on the east wall, are usually the more prominent people. So you're going to say they have to go to the back of the shul. Fine, what about the people in the back? Are they going to come to the front? You're putting them more, you're giving them a greater chivas. So he says, no, you don't necessarily need all that. You just need, you change your place a little bit in order to make a hecker, basically.
From the table, within your own table?
Within, yeah, he says even it could be less than a 4-amma difference. He says he himself, one time when he was an oval, he writes in the shuvah over there that he didn't actually move to a whole different place in the shul. He just, he moved over, a seat or something. I think also during the times when the Rebbe was in Avelus in Chafei after Rebbe Tzimchana and in Memches and Memtes after, well, okay, Memches, the Rebbe davened at home for the most part, Shabbos, he came to 770. Kafei, though, the Rebbe continued davening in 770 all year. As far as I know, the Rebbe didn't change his usual place. He still continued to stand in his usual place. Because you change slightly, but yeah. Oh, but it's a kavod that you're being involved in the hesped and everything for him. No, there is a different kind of kavod. The Gemara mentions in Bava Basra, for example, there's a concept that Meshiv and Yeshiva al Kivra, that sometimes for an exceptional Talmud Chacham Faker, they set up a place to learn near his kever as a sign of kavod for him. Next. Nasi Shemes. Now we're up to the top level. We have the Chacham, we have the Avestin, now we're up to the Nasi. When the Nasi passes away, Batim Medrash is Kulam Talin. Then all of the Batim Medrash are bottled. Now we don't mean all the Batim Medrash in the country or something. We mean all different Beforeshim talk about exactly what we mean by all the Batim Medrash, but basically it means all the ones that are directly involved, all the ones that are going to be able to attend the Levaya, all the ones that are going to be able to be there for their Hesedim, etc. And in that case, the people who usually come into shul, the Koran Shiva Biotin. They read, seven people read from the Sefer Torah, and then they leave. Meaning, instead of having tefillah b'tzibur like normal, everybody davens individually in their house, or some Mepharshim say that instead they daven, Rashi says that everybody davens in their house. Other Mepharshim say what they do is actually they go to the Shiva house, they go to where the Avelim are sitting for the Nasi, and they daven over there. They only come to Shul for laning, and then they leave again and they daven Musaf back in their houses or in the Oval's house, as the case may be. And Mepharshim talk about that this, that we're saying that they read seven implies that this is talking about only on Shabbos, that on weekdays maybe they don't even have, there's something the Rogachover writes about that maybe this implies that on weekdays you don't even have such a chiyuv specifically to come to shul to hear Kriyas HaTorah. But on Shabbos obviously you do, so then necessarily you need a minyan for that, so necessarily they come for that purpose. Incidentally, this that we're saying that when a Chacham, when an Av Beis Din, etc. passes away, we're saying that the Beis Medrash is bottle. In Hilchot Shabbos and Shulchan Aruch, it brings this in a different context, because we know that we say Tzidkoska, Shabbos afternoon, in memory of the three great tzaddikim who passed away Shabbos afternoon, Yosef, Moshe, and David. So because of that, or specifically because of Moshe, we symbolically do the same kind of thing, that because the Chacham passed away, or the Abbasin, or the Nasi, whatever you want to call them, that therefore the Batei Medrash are Batel, therefore, it says in Shulchan Aruch, between Mincha and Ma'ariv and Shabbos, you don't have Shiurim. This is why you're not Kaveh Shiurim then. To learn Sidlon B'chavrusa or to learn Pirkei Avos or whatever, that's but you don't have a fixed Shiurim at that time. And it's symbolically this idea over here. So we do instead that somebody chazers over a Mai Mechsidus. That's not the same kind of thing. But yeah.
Yosef,
Moshe, and David. That's why we say three Pesukim in Tzidkoska, commemorating the three of them, yeah. Which gets into a whole other interesting question, by the way, that they have. If Moshe, it says that Moshe wrote 13 Sifrei Torah on the day he passed away. If he passed away on Shabbos, how did he write anything? And there's a lot of different answers. One of them being that actually he didn't write the normal way. One interesting answer is he did Hashvaas HaKulmos, which is a Kabbalistic kind of thing where you say certain Shemus and the pen writes by itself.
Still cannot do it on Shabbos.
That's a whole different question, whether you can do that on Shabbos or not. That there's a lot of ink being spilled on this whole issue. But you're not really making Hashem do the Malacha, but whatever, all right. Anyway. Rabbi Shurban Karchaimer, this that you're saying that Rabbi Shurban Karcha says that everybody just comes to shul for Kriyas HaTorah, lo sheyecho v'yitayla b'shuk. It doesn't mean that people should be going around, strolling around in the street. When they're not in shul, Ela Yoshev and Redoyman, but rather it means they should be sitting in their houses or in the shiva house, as the case may be, and sitting and being quiet, and suffering for the avelos.
Like
I don't know what they're doing upstairs, but I'm sure it's something useful. Continues the price. You do not say shmurs, meaning teachings of halacha, or agadta, in the house of an oval. However, Omer Oliver Rab Hanani ben Gamliel, Shoya Omer Shmur of Agadta Bevesa Oval. But they said about Rab Hanani ben Gamliel that he used to do that. So what do we mean by this? So first of all, First of all, what do we mean? I mean, we said before that the Aval anyway is not allowed to learn Torah. Why are we limiting it now to Shmuel Vagada? So some Mefarshim talk about the idea that here we're talking about specifically on Shabbos. The next sugya is going to be talking about Shabbos. So here also we're talking on Shabbos. That even there's no question the Aval is not allowed to learn Torah. But even on Shabbos, he shouldn't be saying Shmu of Agada. Other Mefarshim say that it means that the other people in the Shiva house should not be saying these things. They can be learning other parts of Torah.
According to
the second way of looking at it, for sure he can't. He can't be learning any kind of Torah. Actually, we had the discussion the other day. Bechlal, is he allowed to learn Hilchos Avelos? The halacha is accepted nowadays is that yes, he is allowed to learn Hilchos Avelos and the sad things in Yirmiyah and the various other things that you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av.
But we're talking about Shabbos.
That's one way of looking at it, is we're talking about Shabbos. Another way of looking at it is we're talking about the other people.
There's no Avelos on Shabbos.
That we're going to be discussing, whether there's Avelos on Shabbos or not. Yeah.
You're allowed to learn about the
Churban. No, you're not. You're allowed to learn about the Churban. So then either we're talking about the Avel himself on Shabbos, or we're talking about the other people there. We're talking about the other people there, that they're allowed to learn Torah, but they're not allowed to be saying over halachas and agata and whatnot. Having said that, though, there is, nowadays in an Aval's house, they say Mishnayos. They learn Mishnayos. And the reason for that is because that's different, because there you're doing it le'ilin nishmas of the nifter, so that's different. Here we're talking about just sam learning. Aval Shabbos Rishona any Yotzim Pesach Beis. So the first Shabbos of the Avelos, the Aval does not leave his house. Shnia Yotze, the second Shabbos already he can leave. It's after Shiva. The Ena Yoshevim. Actually, when we say Shabbos over here, there's different Mefarshim that talk about: do we mean Shabbos as in the seventh day of the week, or do we mean Shabbos as in the week? So the first week, the second week, etc. Anyway. So Shnia Yotzev Ena Yoshevim. The second week he can go out, but he doesn't sit in his normal place. And I go to Bach adds for Enim Adaber, and he doesn't speak. Shlishis Yoshevim Koma, the third week already he can sit in his normal place in Shul, for Enim Adaber, but he still doesn't speak. Revius Harev Chaladim, the fourth week or the fourth Shabbos, he's back to normal. No, we don't do exactly this now. In particular, I mean, the Aval doesn't leave the house during the first week, but after that he goes to Shul and pretty much acts normally, yeah. Rabbi Yehuda, says, you don't need to say that the first Shabbos or the first week he can't go out of his house. Everybody's coming to his house to be menachem aval him. Of course, he's not leaving during that week. So if we're saying that there's this progression that he gradually goes from not leaving at all to leaving and not sitting in his normal place, etc., until he goes back to normal, it has to necessarily begin after the first week or after the first Shabbos. Yes. So therefore, Ella Shnia Eina Yotzei Pesach Beis. So rather, Rabbi Yehuda moves everything down one week. The second week, he doesn't leave his house. Second Shabbos, he doesn't leave his house. Shlishis Yotzei Eina Yoshev Bimkoma. The third week, he can go out, but he doesn't sit in his normal place. And again, I go to Bach adds that he doesn't speak. Revius Yoshev Bimkoma Veina Medaber. The fourth week, or the fourth Shabbos, as opposed to the Tanakhama's third, he already sits in his normal place, but he doesn't speak. And Chamisha said, "I'm going to call him." And the fifth week is already—he's already back to normal. He's like everybody else.
Tanakama
won't answer. So what? Okay, yeah, the first Shabbos he doesn't leave. So what? Okay, we didn't have to say it, but nevertheless, it's part of the progression. Yeah, it has to be said.
You don't have to say it.
Pretty much. Yeah. Tana Rabbanan. Kol Shloshim Yom LeNisuin. During the first 30 days of Avelos, there's a restriction on Nisuin, on getting married. So for the 30 days, and this applies to whatever kind of relative it was that passes away, you can't remarry. Meisa Ishtoi, and if a person's own wife passes away, also Lista Ishachet or Sachi Avrel of Shlosh Regalim, then he's not allowed to remarry until three Regalim have passed. Why three regalim? Tosfos gives a few different reasons. One is that he should be three regalim without simcha, and that way he won't forget the love that he had for his wife. Like this, if he's able to have complete simcha on one of those first three young tovim, then already that's going to distract him from he's going to forget all about his wife.
Are we talking about his wife? only when he's married to her, not when he's divorced from her.
Obviously, yeah. Yeah. If once he's divorced, he doesn't sit shiva for her anyway. No. Another reason Tosfos says is because Shaker, you want that when he gets, just a minute, you want that when he does remarry, you don't want him to be thinking about his first wife anymore, because especially when they're having relations, you don't want that he should be thinking about somebody else. And a third reason Tosfos says is similar to we had the other day, that when a person's wife passes away, you don't go into his house to be menachem avol him after he remarried, because you don't want the second wife to feel slighted. Similarly over here, you want the guy to have already forgotten enough about his first wife that he's not going to mention her to the second one and therefore irritate her. What kind? Chaim, if you want to ask something, please ask it clearly, because I can't hear you. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a regal rishon v'sheni aser, shlishi mutzer. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, only the first two yom tovim, he's aser. The third yom tov already, he's allowed to. The im ein lebanim, but if he doesn't have any children, so he hasn't done period of rivia yet, mutter lisala alta, then he's allowed to marry right away, mishum bitul period of rivia, because otherwise he's being mavatal from the mitzvah of peruvu. What does it mean? Alter that. Also, you have a number of different opinions whether it means right after shloshim, he doesn't have to wait the shalosh regalim, or whether even possibly within the 30 days. On top of that, there's a separate machlokes about you may not be allowed to get married during this time. Are you allowed to get engaged during this time, or is it that not even or not necessarily? Not necessarily. Maybe we're talking. Yeah. Well, the next thing, if his wife left him small children. And before Shem say this doesn't just mean if she left it. It means even, for example, that he had children from a previous marriage. Let's say so he was married once. His first wife had passed away years before. Let's say he's remarried. His second wife was helping him raise the children. Now she passed away. She didn't leave him any children, but nevertheless the children are in his care and he's single. So therefore, mutal is allowed to b'pnei panasas, and therefore also he's allowed to remarry right away in order that they should be able to be taken care of. And again, what does it mean right away? Again, you have the different opinions about it. I believe that Rambam says that actually it means he's even allowed that he may even be allowed to during the shiva.
What does it talk about?
Panasa means taking care of them, basically. Yeah, that's what it means. It means taking care of them. Yes. What kind of right after? No, what kind of right after?
That's
Ruth. Where did he get that from? His wife died when Ruth came to town. That's true. But that's why the pasuk says that there was a whole tumult in the city. But because they were all going to for her levaya. But you don't find that he married her after only a month. As a matter of fact, the pasuk says that she was there gathering in the field throughout the whole barley harvest and throughout the whole wheat harvest, and only after he's threshing his grain and staying overnight by the pile does she approach him and does she stay over there overnight and ask him to marry her, and then the next day things are taken care of. So there's several months must have passed. And
she asked him to marry
her. The whole story in Megillat Esther, right? That she comes at night while he's sleeping by his pile of grain over there to guard it, and he wakes up in the middle of the night and he finds her there, and she says, you know, you're the goyel, you're my husband's closest relative, you're obligated to buy back my husband's fields that were sold, like the Torah says, and also you're supposed to marry me. That part was kind of an optional thing that they did in those days. The Ramban and Chumash explains that they knew in those days of the great power of Yibum, what it accomplishes for the neshama of the nifter, and therefore they would do it not only when it's a brother, that the Torah requires you to do, but even when it was a close relative, another close relative, as long as it was a marriage that's mutter by halacha. So for in this case, Boaz, where there's different opinions, in the Gemara and in the Medrash, whether Boaz was her husband's cousin or nephew or what have you, but whatever it was, he was a close enough relative that he's part of the family, but far enough that he's allowed to marry her. And he tells her there's actually somebody who's closer. There's somebody who this Pliny Almoni who's 1 degree closer. Let me go talk with him tomorrow. And that's the last chapter of Ruth that he goes and talks with him. And Mr. Pliny Almoni says I don't want to get involved. And so Boaz goes and marries Ruth. But yeah, that happened after Bepashtus. There were several months from when Ruth came to town, which the Medrash says is the day that Boaz's first wife passed away, until he married her. What? Then he passed away that night, right after she was pregnant with Ovid. Yeah, that's a whole other matter. But yeah.
Then he passed away.
Yeah. The Medrash.
The very night he married her.
The very night he married her. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's actually, you know, we're going to learn in a couple of months when we get to the whole story of Moavi v'lo Moavis, Amoni v'lo Amonis in Yevamos, the whole story with Ruth over there, the whole story with David, etc. There were a lot of people who in those days who felt that Boaz was wrong in what he had done. How can you marry a Moavis? On the face of it, the Torah says in this week's parasha, you can't. They didn't realize because what does it mean when the Torah says that obviously means after they converted. Before they converted, they can't marry anyway. They can't marry a Jewish woman anyway. It means after they converted. Nevertheless, lo yove amoni o meyove v'kal Hashem. Torah Shabbal Peh tells us, Torah Shabbal Peh tells us, amoni v'loy amonis meyove v'loy meyove. But it wasn't such a clear thing in those days. Sure enough, when Boaz passed away the night we married Ruth, you had a lot of people saying, oh, you see, it was wrong of him to do that. They didn't realize that Adonai was the Eibishter that kept him alive all this time in order that he should be able to father Ovid, who was going to be the grandfather of David. So if I kept, it's not he passed away because he did something wrong, but because that's it. That was the last thing he had to accomplish on the world. But anyway, yeah, that's a whole discussion for another time. We'll talk about it more when we get to that story about Hashem. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So Maita Shemesa Ishter Shal Yosef HaKohen. It once happened that Yosef HaKohen's wife passed away. And he says to her sister right there in the cemetery, go take care of your sister's children. In other words, he was proposing to her, basically. But he didn't actually marry her and have relations with her until much later. That means after the 30 days. So in this case, in other words, he had a hester because he had little children. So we just said he doesn't have to wait the full 3 yavim tovim to remarry, but he did have to wait till after 30 days. What's this business about proposing to her right there in the cemetery? So Tosfos points out that we find in a different place this same Yosef HaKohen. The Gemara mentions in Tzvachim a story involving Bepashtus, the same Yosef HaKohen, that his wife passed away erev Pesach. So if she passed away Erev Pesach, means that Shiva essentially only lasts for one day. Because as soon as Yom Tov comes, then that's it, Shiva is over. So that's what it means that right away he's able to propose to her, and maybe right away even he's able to get engaged to her. Because, yeah, you don't do it during Shiva. It wouldn't be menschlich to do it during Shiva. But like this, Shiva is over anyway. That's what we mean that's what he means that he does it right away. As opposed to in a normal situation where there's a full 7 days of Shiva, 6 days in the morning and the seventh, whatever, then you wait till after that to get engaged.
So quickly in order to pre-arrivia?
No, not pre-arrivia, because he already had children. But because he had little children that needed to be taken care of. Who's likely to take care of them best? Not necessarily another woman who's not related to them at all, their aunt. Who's now going to be their stepmother? Would be a good candidate for the purpose.
When did Shiva end?
So Shiva would have ended. So would have ended that evening.
On
Erev Pesach, yeah.
When did he propose to? On Erev Pesach?
Well, the Gemara says over here it was Beveis Akvaris. But in other words, the point is that once even a little bit of the day has passed. Then already the Yom Tov is going to cancel is going to cancel the Shiva. So therefore, in other words, right. So in other words, the Levaya might have been in the afternoon of Erev Pesach. The Gemara mentions, but the reason why the Gemara mentions it in Zvachim is because this Yosef HaKohen figured, you know what? Forget about the Levaya. I'm going to skip the Levaya. It's Erev Pesach. I want to be bringing the Korban Pesach. But the Chum told him, no, you can't do that. Your obligations to bury your wife and sit Shiva for her take precedence over that. And they forced him to become Tommy for her and to be involved with burying her. But that's if it was right before Yom Tov, then yeah, they could still be standing there as Yom Tov is coming in, and he tells her, you know what, let's, you know, yeah. Yeah. In Shulchan Aruch, by the way, it mentions there are people who are makel on this whole business of remarrying within the three Yom Tovim. The Rama says you shouldn't be makel. I don't know what people do as a practical matter nowadays, whether people are careful about this.
Hypothetical.
I mean, another din about another din that is during the first 30 days. Kol Shloshim Yom LeGihud. All 30 days of Avelos is a time when you're not allowed to do Gihuds. Gihuds we've had a couple of times already. That there's a couple of different explanations what it means, but basically it's sort of similar to ironing. Some Mephoshim talk about that it means using a certain kind of glass stone, I guess that means like obsidian or something like that, to smooth out, to you rub it along the cloth to smooth it out.
Warmed?
What? Not necessarily.
No.
I don't know. I mean, in modern Hebrew, gihutz means ironing,
right.
But in Gemara terminology, what gihutz means is a couple of different possibilities. What it means, but basically, it's something beyond regular. It's something beyond regular laundering. Some other Mephoshim, I think, say that gihutz means using detergent as opposed to kibbutz, might just mean plain water. Yeah. Anyway. So all 30 days, you're not allowed to do gihutz. Echad kelim chadashim ve'echad kelim yishanim yotzei mitocha machmesh. Whether it's new clothes or whether it's old clothes that are coming out of the press. Because what they would do is in those days, after they did the gihutz, then they would press them. The pressing was also similar to ironing. They would put the clothes between. We had earlier in the Masechta about the kind of press that they used in those days. That they put the clothes on the press, and then they'd screw the top board down on top of the bottom one, and the clothes would end up being pressed out very flat.
They were wet, or they were. When
the fashion they were wet, I guess. Yeah, that's the only way to do it. So whether it's new clothes or whether it's old clothes that have been pressed, either way you can't do gihutz. Rebbe Omer.
We don't keep ladies 30 days.
We do actually, and oval basically doesn't wear. I don't know if we do it. Well, since the Gemara is going to say in a minute that it only applies to new clothes, then it only applies to new clothes.
Applying
so,
old clothes can be
right. So I think the actual halacha as done nowadays is after Shiva an oval. Can wear, you know, it's not like during the 9 days, for example, where you don't wear, you know, you don't wear clothes unless you don't wear freshly laundered clothes, but you don't wear new clothes. You don't go and buy new clothes, even if you don't say Shachiyonu on them, for 30 days for regular avelos and 12 months for parents.
What about ironing? You can iron?
I think so.
During the 30 days?
I think so. I'm not. Yeah. Well, because again, the Gemara is going to say in a minute that the halacha is it only applies to new clothes. The Rebbe Omer like Osur El Kelim Chadashim Bovad. Rebbe says this issur of gihutz only applies to new clothes. And Rebbe Lazar, but Rebbe Shimon Omer like Osur El Kelim Chadashim Lavanim Bovad. He goes further. He says not only it has to be new clothes, but it has to be white ones. And so the Gemara tells Abaya Nofik Begarded a Sarbala Kerebbe. Abaya during the 30 days of his avelus. Went out with a combed with a garment of combed wool, which was according to Rebbe, because Rebbe said that the issur was only by new clothes, and this was already an old one, so it was combed to make it look nice and fluffy and new, but still it was old. And Rava nof b'chimutzta rumisa sumakta chabti. And Rava during his 3 days of avelus went out with a chimutzta, which means it actually says a chaluk, a shirt, rumisa from Rome. Sumakta, which was red, chadati, and was new. And that was Rebbe Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon, because since Rebbe Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon says the problem is only new white clothes, this one was red. So it's okay. So therefore, so Tosfos summarizes.
Rumisa
means from Rome.
What
so
is
was
the,
it,
what's, the importance?
What's the point of the importance of that it was from Rome? Doesn't say, but it was a new red garment that had come from Rome. Yeah, what the point is mentioning it was from Rome, basically.
Maybe good quality.
Maybe. It could be because the Gemara mentions in the Gemara in Bava Metzia that says that talks about a good way to lose a large fortune. In other words, the Gemara is saying over there, like so to speak, you know, be careful about doing these kinds of things. You could easily lose a lot of money with them.
Meaning what? Buying.
So one of them is wearing Roman linen clothing. Because the point is, it came from Rome, it was very expensive, but it wasn't necessarily such good quality, so it would wear out very quickly. So therefore, you know, that's therefore, in other words, like, be careful about that. That's a good way to lose a lot of money. So maybe maybe that's the point over here. Since it was from Rome, then, yeah, maybe, you know.
What
does it say there? Say good morning, Bob.
Can you close the door? Yeah.
And so Tosfos summarizes the bottom Tosfos over here, since whenever we have a Baya versus Rava, the halacha is always like Rava, then fine, that means, in turn, since Rava had said, halacha is like Rava Lazar Rav Shimon, then that's what it is. So you're allowed to wear, during the 30 days, you're allowed to wear colored clothes that have been pressed, that have been ironed, or whatever, even if they're new. And if they're white, then it's okay as long as they're old ones. So the only problem would be if they're new and white and pressed. The Mishnah had said, "Mifnei she'amru Shabbos olav einim afsekes." That they said, and the Chachamim said a general rule: Shabbos counts towards the 7 days of Shiva, but it doesn't interrupt them. So what does that mean? Bnei Yehuda or Bnei Galila? There was an argument on this between the people of Yehuda and the people of Galil. Hani amri yesh avelus b'Shabbos. The one group said that it means that there is avelus on Shabbos, that you do still continue doing the dinim of avelus on Shabbos. The Haniyamah ain't avelus for Shabbos, and the other group says that you don't. When we had before, I forgot to mention, when we said before that Rav Hanani ben Gamliel would say Shmur v'agada b'veisa oval, some of Farshim say that goes together with our Gemara over here. Rav Hanani ben Gamliel was one of the Bnei Yehuda. He's the son of Rav Gamliel, the Nasi from Yavne. So he held that ain't avelus for Shabbos, like the Bnei Yehuda do over here. So therefore he said, fine, we're sitting in the Shiva house on Shabbos. Okay, but we can still talk Shmur v'agada because it's Shabbos. Well, the Bnei Galil would have held not. Yeah. Manda Amar Yesh Avelus for Shabbos to Katani Oila. The Bnei Galil who say that there is Avelus on Shabbos, they say, because after all, the Mishnah says that it counts towards Avelus. And Tosfos adds the fact that if the Mishnah meant to say that there's no Avelus on Shabbos, it should have said that there's no Avelus on it.
What would happen? You have to count another day for 7 days?
No, if we said that Oilav in Ba'avelus, then it would mean that it counts as one of the 7 days, but you don't actually do the dinim of Avelus on it. Since it doesn't say that, that implies that you actually have to do Avelus on it. Mandoma ain't Avelus for Shabbos, whereas the Bnei Yehuda would say that there's no Avelus on Shabbos, they say, well, because only ain't Mafsekis. The Mishnah says it doesn't interrupt the Avelus, implying even though you're not having Avelus on that day, nevertheless, it doesn't interrupt things. Tosfos discusses over here, by the way, is this Machlokas talking about all of the dinim of Avelus? I mean, according to the Bnei Golol, are we talking about you still have to sit on the lower stools and keep your shoes off, etc.? Or are we talking specifically only about Dvarim Shmitzina? The Gemara is going to talk about soon that we have the distinction in Hilchas Avelus between Dvarim Shepahestia, Avelus Shepahestia, public manifestations of Avelus, versus Dvarim Shebetzina, things that are done in private, of which the most notable of those is Tashmish Amitah. So when we say over here that Yesh Avelus or Ein Avelus for Shabbos, Tosfos says that we're talking specifically about Dvarim Shebetzina, which the Gemara is going to discuss soon, that issue of whether Tashmish Amitah is allowed during Shabbos of Shiva.
And not all the other ones.
Not all the other ones. Either Bnei Gola would agree that the other ones are not. Yeah. The Gemara asks, wait a minute, Isak Kedaitach Yesh Avelus B'Shabbos, you have to consider, after all, it's true the Mishnah says Ola, but it does say Einim Asekes, so you have to ask, according to the Bnei Golo, Isak Kedaitach Yesh Avelus B'Shabbos, if you're going to actually think that Avelus does apply on Shabbos, Hashta Avelus Naga Asukim Ebaya, then what would the Mishnah even have to say, Einim Asekes? If you actually follow the dinim of Avelus, or some of them at least, the Dvarim Shebetzina on Shabbos, then how much more so? Then of course it's not matzik. What would be according to the Bnei Golo? Why is the mission? Why would the mission even have to say the Einim Afsekis? According to the Bnei Yehuda, we understand since you're not actually doing anything of Avelos on Shabbos, you might think that it's considered that it's considered like it breaks off things. It might be considered you have to actually do 7 days of Dine Avelos, and since Shabbos is not one of them, then therefore you have to have one extra day the following week. That would be the Einim Afsekis, that it doesn't interrupt things. But
it counts as one of the 7 days.
It counts as one of the, well, the Oila actually counts as one of the Einim Afsekis means it doesn't break off the Avelus, meaning you have to resume after Shabbos.
Fine, because you didn't do any of these things on Shabbos, but you have to resume them after Shabbos. But if you're actually doing them on Shabbos, then what's the Einim Hafsekes? Of course you don't. Of course not Mafsek. You were doing the Dinim of Havelos on Shabbos itself. So the Gemara asks, okay, ve'alochatani oila. Okay, fine, but after all, okay, you have a good point, but then why would the Mishnah have to use the word oila? Why would the Mishnah have to say that it counts? The fact that you're saying it counts implies that yes, you don't do things in Avelos then. Otherwise, what's the point of saying it? It counts, obviously.
Obviously,
it counts.
If you do it, it does count.
Yeah. And the answer would be, you could say that because the second half, when the Mishnah can start talking about the Yom Tovim, that we say that the Yom Tovim Einam Olam, that they don't count Regolim Afsikin Veinam Olam, the Mishnah had said that the Regolim interrupt the Shiva or the Shloshim, and they don't count towards it, as we had a few days ago. So then, because it has to say that, Tana Resha Oila, so therefore the first part by Shabbos, it uses the word Oila, even though maybe that's not so precise. Because
Symmetry,
basically, yeah. And the other way around.
Anything added to symmetry?
No, of course, because remember, the Mishnah was learned by heart, so it was important to keep things symmetrical so people can memorize it. So we find a lot of times the wording in Mishnah is not in one part of Mishnah is not so precise because it's just meant to be in parallel with the next part where it is.
Remember.
Yeah. And the other way around, Lamando Ami Yesh Avelus for Shabbos. What about according to the Bnei Yehuda that there is Avelus for Shabbos? Hakatani Einim Afsekes. What do they do with the words Einim Afsekes? Again, that Einim Afsekes makes sense according to the Bnei Golo. The other way around. Sorry. According to the Bnei Golo, that Yesh Avelus for Shabbos, Hakatani Einim Afsekes, then it says if you say that there's no Avelus on Shabbos, then fine. We understand why the Mishnah has to tell us. Nevertheless, it doesn't break things all. You still have to resume after Shabbos. But if you do Avelus on Shabbos anyway, what do you need to say it? And again, same answer. Mishum to Kaboy Lamisna, say from Afsekin, since the last part by the Yom Tovim has to say that it does break it off, that it, the Shiva or Shloshim breaks off when Yom Tov comes, Tonoresh Enim Afsekis. So the first part also says Enim Afsekis. So both the Bnei Yehuda and the Bnei Golol have to say that the wording in the Mishnah is not quite precise. There's an interesting thing, by the way. At the end of the Tosfos Yoman De'Omer, he quotes from a Yerushalmi that Shabbos there's no Avelus in it because the pasuk says the Birkas Hashem Hitashir, the bracha of Hashem makes you wealthy, v'lo Yosef etzim ima, and there will not be any sadness with it. And Birkas Hashem refers to Shabbos. So therefore, on Shabbos, ain't esef. There's no sadness on Shabbos. The Rebbe used to quote this all the time during the Shabbosim of Sfira in the 3 weeks. That since that's back of the halacha is that ain't available for Shabbos except for Dvarim Shabbatina. Therefore, that means that when it comes the Shabbosim of Sfira or the Shabbosim of the 3 weeks, you have to be extra happy in order that there shouldn't be any asvos.
To conform to halacha.
Yeah.
Where does he take that
from? From this, that we're saying ain't esiv, although there's no sadness on Shabbos.
And where does that come from?
So it comes from the Yerushalmi, that's what we're saying. The Gemara says, Lema Katanoi, can we say that this machlokas between the Bnei Yehuda and the Bnei Golol reflects the machlokas Tanoim? The Mishnah says in Brachos, Misha Mesim, or a Brice actually, Misha Mesim Mutal Lefanov, a person whose mess is lying in front of him. Then he has to eat until the burial takes place. He has to eat in another house or another room. If he doesn't have another room, then he should eat in his friend's house. Whether we're talking, by the way, whether are we talking about Davka Meisoi as in somebody who you're obligated to sit Shiva for and bury them and whatever, or are we talking about even, for example, the Gemara mentions in Brachas over there that these first couple of dinim as far as eating over there apply also to a shomer. If you're a shomer for a mess, then also you're not supposed to eat right in front of the mess. You turn aside or you go into another room if possible. If you don't have another room and you also don't have a friend's house, then you make a mechitza 10 tefachim tall, and then you eat.
But don't they bring to the ahol food?
Yeah. What's okay?
If he doesn't have somewhere to go, normally they bring it to
No, the bringing him the food. Well, the bringing him the food actually is a sort of havla. That's the first meal after the burial. Here we're talking about before the burial. Here we're talking about before the burial, so they're not necessarily bringing him food, but he's got to eat. So therefore, instead, he should eat someplace else, or he turns away, or
but
whatever.
He's already a novel, right?
No, he's not a novel. He's an oinen at this point.
An oinen on top of
it. Oinen and oval are two different things. Avelos only, we said yesterday or the day before, Avelos only begins after the burial, or for the people who didn't attend the Levaya, then as soon as they leave the funeral. For the people who don't attend the burial, I mean, as soon as they leave the Levaya. But here we're talking about an oinen, that's the earlier stage of that.
And they don't help the oinen?
Not that they don't help, of course they can help, but there's no specific obligation to. If he doesn't have any food, obviously they bring him, but that everybody specifically brings him food, that's the Suda Sagra, that's after the burial, that's the beginning of Shiva. If he doesn't have anything to make a mechitza with, then at least he should turn his face away and eat because of the covered of the mess. However, he should not recline and eat because the idea is some of these things that we're talking about in this braisa are because of the covered of the mess because you don't want him to get all comfortable and then he's going to delay and then forget about the kavura. Some of them are then we're going to have several things because he's potter from mitzvahs as long as he's an einan.
And if Pesach,
what about it? No,
it goes to another room. He can lean.
No, not necessarily. No, because if we're saying that he's potter from kol mitzvah samurus vater, then he'd be potter from the seder altogether. But what are we talking about? I mean, if the mess passed away erev yom tov, then comes Pesach the seder night, he's not novel anymore. Shiva is over. But if you'd have to be talking about that the mess died right before the seder. Okay, I don't know what you do exactly then, but I also don't know really to what extent these halachas apply nowadays, because nowadays we have a chevra kadisha. When a person's relative passes away, you yourself are not necessarily involved in the burial. You delegate it to the chevra kadisha. So then in that case, not necessarily. I mean, you still can't eat right in front of the mess. You would be a bazillion to the mess. But the other dinim over here, I don't know to what extent they apply.
I was asking in theory.
Yeah, I don't know. So the ena meisav oichel, he doesn't recline and eat. The ena oichel basa, the ena shoytze yayin, he can't eat meat and drink wine. Similar idea. You don't want him to be too comfortable. Now comes a bunch of things that have to do with the fact because he's potter from mitzvahs. The ena mevorech, he does not take brachas on his food. The ena mezamen, he can't be counted towards the mezuman. They can't bench with him in mind. Rashi says when we say ein mevarach, sorry, Rashi says over here that ein mevarach doesn't mean he doesn't make brachas on food. It means he can't be motzi other people with the brachas. We know that normally we had a few months ago in Sukkah, I think it was that with most brachas you can be motzi other people as long as you yourself weren't yotzi. You can say I'm motzi, for example, and be motzi everybody or any birkas hanan or any birkas mitzvahs. Here the onan can't do that. He's potter from mitzvahs. So that's the vein of mevarach.
Someone who's potter from mitzvahs
can't be motzi other people. No, how could he?
Possibly potter.
There's actually a question. There is actually a discussion among the poskim. When we say over here, for example, eni mevarach ve'eni mezamen, etc., does it mean he's not allowed to, or does it mean he doesn't have to?
Right.
The halacha at Paskin and Shulchan Aruch means he's not allowed to, whether he likes it or not, because we don't want him to be masiach das from the mess. And again, nowadays, when we have a chevra kadisha, not necessarily does that. There still is the din that he's potter from certain mitzvahs, right. But yeah. Ve'eni mevarach. They don't say brachas on behalf of him. Ve'en mezamnen olav, they can't join him in the mezuman. Ve'en mezamnen means he doesn't make the mezuman. Ve'en mezamnen olav means they can't count him towards it. Potter mekriyishma minatfilo minatfilin. He's potter from kriyishma and from davening, from an esrei and from tefillin. Or mekom mitzvah samurus b'tarda and from all other mitzvahs hasei that are in the Torah.
For how long?
Well, until the burial. Over Shabbos, but if it's on Shabbos and he's still an Oinen, then he can recline and eat. Oh, so there's the answer. I guess as far as Pesach would probably be the same as Shabbos in that regard.
the mace of oichel, but oichel boss of a shoysi yain, he can't eat meat, he can't drink wine, he can drink wine, or mavorech or mazaman, he can make brachas to remote the other people, he can make a mazuman, or mavorech or mazaman in olive, he can make brachas, they can make brachas on his behalf, they can include him in a zimun, v'chayev v'kriyashmo v'tfilo of v'chomet tisamores v'tora, and he will be chayev in all these mitzvahs. When we say tefillin, by the way, either we mean this would be according to the opinion that you wear tefillin on Shabbos. We learned about that last year in Erevin, or it would be maybe the word tefillin doesn't belong over here. Maybe just before the copyist put it in by mistake because before we had it. Anyway, continues the Braisa. Here's the crux of it. Here's the reason why we quoted it. Rav Gamliel Omer mitochshin is chayev be'elin is chayev be'kolon. Once he's chayev in these things, in kriyashma and tefillin and so forth, then he's chayev in all other mitzvahs. Now, what does that mean? So Rabbi Yochanan says that means that they're arguing about Tashma Shamita. Rashi says that it means when Rabbi Gamliel is saying that the onan on Shabbos that the onan on Shabbos is chayev in all mitzvahs, that includes that he's chayev in the mitzvah of onan.
We're talking
on Shabbos. That's what we're saying. Well, the chayev kolon means he's chayev in everything. Means, in other words, that so if it's a matter of owner, then he's chayev in that. But otherwise, at least he's mutter. Chayev. When we say chayev kriyashma v'tfilo, etc., it means he has to say kriyashma davin, etc. So similarly here, if it's the owner, if it's the normal time for him to be with his wife, then he has to do that. Sheir v'tzavay nasa layigra. And even if not, it means he's mutter. Whereas the Chachamim, the Tanakhama, would be saying that no, he's only Chayev in Kriyashma Tfilah and Tfilin, but he is still also in Tashma Shemitah. Some of Farshim say the other way around. Some of Farshim learn the other way around that Rav Gamliel is the one who's saying that he's not chayev or not allowed to do Tashma Shemitah, and the Chachamim are holding he is. Either way, when we say over here the Bnei Yehuda and Bnei Golil are arguing about whether there's Avelos on Shabbos or not, the pashtus, it seems to be the same machlokas. My lab, b'hokam iflagi. Doesn't it seem that they're arguing on the same thing? Demar tzava yesh avelis b'shabbos, demar tzava ain avelis b'shabbos. The Tanakhama holds that there is avelis on Shabbos, so therefore you chayev in most mitzvahs, but you're still restricted in dvarim shabbatzina, in tashma shamita. And Rav Gamliel would be saying that no, that ain avelis b'shabbos is not even dvarim shabbatzina apply on Shabbos. That would be the same machlokas. Rav Gamliel would be like the Bnei Yehuda, and the Chum would be like the Bnei Golil. Well, the Gemara says, how is that a proof? Mimai, how can you prove anything from that? Dilma ad kam le kama Tanakhama hasam elam shem demesim lutul uponam. Maybe the difference is the Tanakhama would say, you know why you're also in Tashma Shamita, in Dvarim Shabbatzina? Because after all, the mess is lying there in front of you. You haven't buried him yet. So that's more serious. Aval hocha de'en mesa mutal uponav, but after the burial, during Shiva, the mess is not lying in front of him. Why then? Maybe not. Maybe even the Tanakhama would agree at that point that Tashma Shemitah is mutter. And the other way around also. V'adkan le'kama Rav Gamliel hasam da'akati le'chal avelus aleh. Rav Gamliel might be saying, you know why he's mutter? Because after all, the real dinim of avelus have not begun yet. Avelus doesn't begin until Tzalchi sasam agolos. No, it's the other way around. The Tanakhama is saying the fact that the mess has not been buried yet makes it more stringent, you might say. That therefore, Aninus is more stringent than Avelus. Whereas Rav Gamliel would be saying the other way around, that no, it's more lenient, because the actual right. Dinim of Avelus have not taken effect yet.
Right.
We know, for example, I mean, an Onan doesn't yet have to take off his shoes, he doesn't yet have to, a bunch of the Dinim of Avelus don't apply yet.
Lots
of Yain.
Why the Aninus hasn't started?
Avelus hasn't because Avelus only starts after the burial. Avelus, yeah. Avel Avelus ala hochanami, but maybe once Avelus starts, maybe Rav Gamliel would agree that he's also. So you can't prove that this machlokas and this price over here has anything to do with machlokas of Bnei Yehuda and Bnei Golo. I guess we'll throw a little onto Chavdalet, especially because we're gonna have ground to cover the next few days anyway. So more on this topic. Bominate Rabbi Yochanan and Mishmuel. Yes, Avelus for Shabbos, there ain't Avelus for Shabbos. Then Rabbi Yochanan asks Shmuel, is there Avelus on Shabbos or not? It's
a generational debate.
Well, so actually it's an interesting thing. We don't usually find Rabbi Yochanan asking from Shmuel. They were contemporaries, and in fact the Gemara tells in Cholin that Rabbi Yochanan used to send his questions to Rav, But after Rav passed away, he didn't feel that Shmuel was on the same level, at least at the beginning. So either we would have to say that eventually he did, although Tosfos points out over here, according to that, it would mean Rabbi Yochanan asked a question, Shmuel gave him an answer, but still Rabbi Yochanan didn't end up accepting the answer. We're going to have tomorrow, that Rabbi Yochanan, in fact, disagrees with what Shmuel says over here. There is another girsa that wasn't Rabbi Yochanan, that was a Mar Yochni or whatever. In that case, then it wouldn't be an issue. But yeah, anyway. Amalei, so Shmuel tells him, ain't avelus for Shabbos. No avelus on Shabbos. So in other words, even Dvarim Shabbatzina, you're allowed to. Yasvi Rabbanan kameid Rapapa, v'ka'amri b'shmeid Shmuel. So one time that Rabbanan was sitting in front of Rapapa and saying over in the name of Shmuel, Ovel sheshim shmitasi b'me'ev le'chayiv misa. That if an Ovel has relations during the days of Azavelos, during Shiva, then it would be chayiv misa. Chayiv misa like midrabbanan. Omelahu Rapapa. So Rapapa tells them, no, Osu Itmar, you got it wrong. First of all, Osu Itmar. First of all, it wasn't that he's Chayiv Misa. It was just saying that Osu. And number two, it wasn't Shmuel who said that, it was Shmei Rabbi Yochanan Itmar. It was actually said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Ish Mielahu B'Shmei Shmuel Hachish Mielahu. But if you think that you heard something in the name of Shmuel about this, then there was something else. Hachish Mielahu. What you heard is as follows. I'll tell you what Shmuel said about a din of Avelos where a person would be chayiv mitzvah for failing to follow it. It wasn't Tashmish Amitah. It was something else. Namely, Amar Rav Tachlifa Baravimi Amashkul, Ovel Shalei Parah Shalei Pidam, if an Ovel does not rip his clothes, technically, Shalei Parah that does not grow his hair, Shalei Pidam, and doesn't rip his clothes, chayiv mitzvah. Shenema, Rosh Sheikhim al Tifro, Vigdechim al Tifroim, Rolaisam Musa Vigayma. Moshe tells Elazar and Isamar that don't let your hair grow long, don't rip your clothes after another Naviu, Rolaisam Musa Vigayma, and you won't die. Which implies, it implies two things. Number one, it implies if they do, they'll be Chayiv Misa, because if a Kohen does the Avodah with long hair, with torn clothes, he's Chayiv Misa Vidishmaim. But number two, we're taking it in another way also, that it means Ha'achar Shalek Parav, Shalek Pirim, Chayiv Misa. It means if somebody else, who's not Elazar any summer, were to not grow his hair or not tear his clothes, then he would be Chayiv Misa.
Is that Chayiv Misa for both? If he didn't do both of them?
No, it means one or the other.
One or the other.
Preposterous, yeah. So Rapapa is telling them, you heard that Shmuel said about a certain thing, if a person is, about a certain din of Avelos, that a person is careless with his Chayiv Misa. Wasn't talking about Tashmish Alveta. After Rabbi Yechanan was said. And he didn't say anything in Chayiv Misa anyway, he just said it's also. What Shmuel said was about failing to do Puri or Prima. Yeah. Amar Rafram, to finish this off, Amar Rafram about Papa, Tanya Ba'ovo Rabasi, we learn in Ovo Rabasi, which is Masechus Malchus, Ovo Otto L'Shamash Mitasu B'mei Evlo, that an Otto is not allowed to have relations during the days of his Avelos, or Mais Ba'echat Shimish Mitasu B'mei Evlo, and it once happened, in fact, that someone did, V'shamtu Chazirim Es Gviyasai, and pigs ripped apart his Gviyah. What is Rashi? What is Gviya? Rashi says two possibilities. One is that Gviya means his body. He was ripped apart by wild boars. The second explanation is Gviya means specifically his aver, his male organ. He used that for the wrong thing, and therefore that happened. Why if it's Chazerim, the Maharal says that a Chazer is like the ultimate hedonistic kind of animal, like just lives for its own pleasure, and therefore that was the appropriate thing for this person who didn't control his own nature. What are we talking about over here, by the way? The Gilyan Ashas over here, Rabbi Akiva Eger asks, what's the point of this whole thing? We know already Tashmash HaMetah is Osir during Shiva. What's the whole Chiddush over here that Rabbi Yochanan would have to say it, that he'd have to say it's Osir, and this whole thing? So the Rashash answers like this. The Rashash answers with another question. He says, what's all this doing in the middle over here anyway? We were talking over here about what's allowed and what's not allowed on Shabbos. Why is this coming in over here? He says, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about during the weekdays of Shiva. There's no question Tashmash HaMetah is Osir. We had that already earlier in the Perek, that Ovel Osir with Tashmash HaMetah. We're talking even on Shabbos. This is what we're discussing over here. Since we're talking about it here, whether Dvarim Shabbat Sina apply on Shabbos or not, we're saying that we're saying, Rashi Bar Papa is quoting here from Ovel Rabasi, that an Ovel is not allowed to do it, even on Shabbos,
as stringently as
on the weekdays, yeah. And that's Pachad HaLacha in the end, is that we do say that Dvarim Shabbat Sina are noyeg on Shabbos of Shiva.
So Dvarim Shabbat Pahesia, so Avela, the public aspects of Avelas do not apply on Shabbos, therefore the Oval the Oval comes to Shul, I think, and then Davin and everything, yeah, but the Dvarim Shabbat Tzina, the things that take place privately in the house, those he continues to do.